Performance anxiety has sidelined many gifted artists, but it's also something that affects a lot of people who don't work on stage. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, overcoming performance anxiety. I'll talk with two people who work on stage. Christina Mixamung is principal violist of the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. Tim Hankowicz is the director of Orchestra Iowa. And Kathleen Staley. She's a counselor at the University of Iowa who has helped many people work through a number of different kinds of performance anxiety. We also want to hear from you. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We all know what it's like to feel nervous, but for some people, anxiety can be debilitating. And this hour, we're going to talk about performance anxiety and how to overcome it. Later in the hour, Kathleen Staley will be here. She's a counselor at the University of Iowa who helps people work through a number of different kinds of performance anxiety. But first, we'll focus on a field where performance anxiety is common and can be a career ender, musical performance. Christina Mixamung is here. She's the principal violist of the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. Hello, Christina.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And you have been playing for a very long time, since you were 9 years old, but you've had experiences with performance anxiety. When did that start being something that you dealt with?
It didn't hit me until I was in college, when I realized that I had to practice in order to be successful, because in high school and before that, I didn't really have to practice to be successful in what my teachers expected. But when you get to college, it's a whole different ballgame. And I had to actually practice, and I didn't have any idea how to do that. So then performances became very scary because there was a higher expectation level, and I wasn't prepared for that.
Do you remember an experience where you were on stage and panicked?
There was one performance, and it was for my colleagues at school back at Minot State University, and we had a weekly sort of student recital, and I had not practiced enough, and it was my turn to play, and it was the most embarrassing 5 minutes or so of my life. I don't even remember what it sounded like. All I could remember was just not even being able to hardly move. It was scary.
Why, in retrospect, do you think that happened?
Well, I realized when I got on stage that I didn't know what I was going to do. I hadn't even been able to play some of the passages in the piece, and I knew I had to get through it, but I didn't know what to do, and so I kind of froze.
After that experience, how did you process that? I mean, obviously, you didn't want to go through that again.
Right.
And that would make getting on stage again scary.
It was, and before that, I mean, I loved to perform. I liked to be on stage. I liked to be the center of attention. But I had a lot of work to do. I knew that. I figured that out. And that actually helped me start practicing and figure out what to do to make a system so that that wouldn't happen again.
What's your system?
Well, I try to control all the variables I can. Because the scariest thing about performing is that you don't know what's going to happen. So if I can take the guesswork out of it, the number one thing is practicing beyond practicing, and not just practicing the notes I'm going to play. You have to practice all the things you're going to do. So that means walking on stage. You have to know where you're going to stand and all of that. You also have to practice finishing a performance, because that's kind of scary too. I mean, you play your last note and you don't just run off stage. You have to, there's a graciousness to it. You have to acknowledge the audience. And so other variables that you can get rid of, you know, make sure you know what you're going to wear. Seems really silly, but the clothing that you wear can really affect your playing. And so I would control all variables that I could. And after that, I would go through all the things I knew I wouldn't be able to control, and just convince myself, that's okay. This could happen. And if you think about that, then that made me feel better, is to know that.
As an observer, I've seen people dealing with performance anxiety who make one mistake, and then that mistake leads to another mistake, and leads to another mistake, and then you just have a cascade. Have you had that experience?
Yeah, there's, you know, you make one mistake and then your thoughts come in and you get mad at yourself, and it's something you have to just take a step back while you're playing, and that's when the practice comes in, because if you've played those notes enough times, you know where to get back into it. And that you have to have that. You have to have the sort of this track running in your head where you can jump off the negative.
You have to stop thinking.
Yeah, you have to stop thinking about that. You can't think about how it's going. You have to think about how you want it to sound.
So after that one bad experience, how long did it take you to come up with a system that worked for you?
Probably the rest of undergrad, which was a couple of years. But I immediately acted as if I was not going to have that happen again, so that the people around me and my mentors and my teachers didn't have to wonder if I was going to be okay. I wasn't okay on the inside, but I just, you know, they say fake it till you make it.
Right.
I just made that happen. But it took me a long time to get that really, that system set in place.
Did it change how you feel about performing permanently?
Yeah, because I love it even more now.
Really?
Yeah. It's the best day of my year is when my students perform. I teach private lessons, and for them to get up and perform, and I work with them about why you feel nervous, how you can get through that. And when they perform, and then I get up and play at the end of the recital, that's the best, because they understand that we all go through that.
Now, when you had that bad experience, you were performing in front of people whose opinions you valued a great deal. How does the audience impact your feelings about a performance?
A lot. It does. If I'm performing in orchestra, there are fewer people watching me, so there's a lot less anxiety there. Now, in a rehearsal with a new conductor, that's a little bit more stressful. But you, whoever's watching you, it does matter, because if I know they know the piece I'm playing or how a viola is supposed to sound, then there's a lot more pressure to do it right. Some people just, oh, that was pretty, no matter what you do.
With being a professional musician, there are times when you have to audition, where you have to play by yourself, and you know that the person who is auditioning you is judging you and listening closely. How does that feel?
That is the scariest day ever, is when I have to audition. 100% of the people on the other side of that screen are listening for my mistakes. It is the hardest thing to do. I hate auditioning. It's a horrible thing that has to be part of our life as musicians, because how else are they going to know if you're good enough? But it is very hard. And being on the other side of that screen now as principal viola in Dubuque, I can hear the nervousness from the people. But I really want them to know that actually the judges are not hoping you fail. They're hoping you sound great, because then their job is done.
When you hear the nerves, does that change how you're thinking about that person's performance?
I kind of feel like I'm a little easier on them, because I can relate to how they feel. Not everybody on the committee is always going to feel that way, but I feel like I'm the champion for those who deal with nerves.
I'm talking with Christina Mixamunk. She is the principal violist of the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. Also with us today, Tim Hankowicz, who is the director of Orchestra Iowa. Hello, Tim.
Hello. How are you?
Great. And now, anybody who's seen you perform with Orchestra Iowa, or even heard you on this program,
right?
I think would assume that you are a natural performer. But you have struggled with this as well.
I have struggled with performance anxiety a lot. And actually, just listening, I brought back a lot of memories, because before I was a conductor, I was also a pianist. I call myself a recovering pianist. And I really think that performance is a skill that needs to be practiced, because I think at the heart of performance anxiety is to give yourself enough room to accept the fact that a mistake is going to be made, and you have to have enough confidence in yourself knowing that you'll be able to deal with it. And the stronger that confidence becomes, the less anxiety you have. And so as a result, I think a lot of musicians, especially early on in their career, spend a lot of time in the practice room and not enough time on stage. And as a result, one of my great frustrations was when I was performing, always being disappointed that my public performance wasn't as good as my private practicing. And that's because I wasn't performing enough. flash forward some 20 some years or so since I've been a serious pianist, and I've gotten back to it, and I've been playing a lot more chamber music as of late, and I'm not nowhere near the pianist I once was, but I wish I knew then what I know now, because I'm a much more comfortable pianist now, because I'm going to make mistakes, and I just don't care nearly as much. Not that I don't care about the quality of the performance, but I'm much more confident in who I am, that I'll be able to deal with that moment, not if, but when it comes. And I think that is the crucial moment that will determine whether someone is able to get over their performance anxieties.
So back when you were a pianist and that was your primary focus, what were the experiences that you had that made you change your mind about your career?
Well, I remember... to put into some perspective, for a pianist, you're playing 100,000 notes in 3 minutes in a particular order that has to be perfect. And if you're the only instrument on stage, you make one mistake. Point A needs to lead to point B to point C. And if you miss point B, you might not get to point C. And as a result, that's a lot of pressure. And I remember towards the end of my undergrad, I was getting ulcers. And if you talk to my wife, who was my girlfriend then, I was absolutely unbearable 3 weeks before my recital. I mean, you could not talk to me. But I was smart enough to realize that either I had to change my approach or change professions completely, because another 40 years of that was going to destroy me. And so luckily I was smart enough to really reevaluate how I was handling stress and what were the true implications of what we were doing. Because at the end of the day, a performance isn't about the person on stage, it's about the audience. And that is a huge psychological shift. And that gives you more permission just to not to worry about failure quite so much.
Interesting. Yeah. So when you think about the audience, I mean, I was talking to Christina a little bit about it, and, you know, knowing mm-hmm. that there are people listening to you and judging you is a very difficult
right.
kind of performance. But what do you mean?
Context is everything. If you're talking about an audition where you're being judged by your peers, that is very scary. When you're talking about an audience who's there for the enjoyment of the music, it's no longer about you. It's about the music. And it's your job to do it to the best of your abilities. And so be it.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back and talk more about performance anxiety. With me this hour, Tim Hankowitz. He's the director of Orchestra Iowa. Christina Mixamung, she's the principal violist with the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. And Christina's going to play us out to the break. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about performance anxiety. We're hearing stories about experiencing performance anxiety. We're also going to talk about overcoming performance anxiety. And you're welcome to join our conversation. You don't have to be a musician to call and share your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Tim Hankowitz, he's the director of Orchestra Iowa, based in Cedar Rapids, of course. Christina Mixamung, the principal violist of the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. And also joining the conversation now is Kathleen Staley. She's a counselor at the University of Iowa who helps people work through a number of different kinds of performance anxiety. Hello, Kathleen.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And now we've been talking about the experience of musicians on stage and that kind of performance anxiety. But there are a number of different kinds of performance anxiety. Can you give me some definitions? Help us think about some of the other kinds.
Well, I've worked with university students for many years, and I've been very happy to work with them. And we work with various performance anxiety issues, such as test-taking anxiety or public speaking anxiety. Many students have a requirement to pass a rhetoric class in which they have to give a speech, and that can be very anxiety-producing. Obviously, music performance, and I have worked with the School of Music, and then stage performance with the Department of Theater.
It's interesting, I think, to a lot of people. With musicians, it makes sense that, you know, maybe you would have fallen so much in love with the music that the idea of performing on stage is a kind of an afterthought that you have to deal with. With people who want to be in plays and the whole idea is to perform on stage, I think some people are like, wait, why would they even be in theater if they experience performance anxiety? Is that a different kind of phenomenon, Kathleen?
I really don't think it's very different because when you think about anxiety and what produces it, our central nervous system is activated and it's influenced by our thoughts and it's influenced by our physical reaction and then our emotional reaction. And those three variables play out in all types of performance anxiety.
Do you feel like everyone experiences this physical phenomenon to some degree when they perform? Those nerves kick in. There are some of those physical reactions?
Well, I would hope there'd be some, because if we were at an absolutely totally relaxed state, we wouldn't have the energy or the motivation to perform well. And so there probably will be a little bit, but there's a broad range of experience of anxiety from a little bit. There can be anticipatory anxiety before we perform, and then once we get going, we're fine. Or there can be anxiety during a performance. And it can range from very minimal to very incapacitating.
So when you experience those nerves to a fairly mild degree, does that do something positive for your body and for your performance?
I think it does. I think it helps our motivation. It helps our energy level. If you have no anxiety at all, you may sound kind of flat. There's an energy to it that we want and an excitement to it. And so we want a little bit.
All right, so we need that adrenaline.
A little bit.
And Tim, I'm sure that's a phenomenon you've seen as well. You have to have some of that.
Absolutely, but it's the difference between euphoria of performing or if there's too much adrenaline and you're shaking. And when you're talking about musicians who are just doing micro adjustments all the time, a lot of the challenge is calming your system down, slowing the mind down. So I've often heard that sometimes you have to think slow to be fast. And so in many ways, performance for a musician is a Herculean struggle with oneself and mastery over the body. And sometimes too much adrenaline can be not a good thing.
So you have to find that sweet spot.
What is that sweet spot? Exactly right.
Well, and Christina, I know that... In preparation for this show, when we were talking with you, you mentioned that you have friends in musical performance who have actually tried to use medications or beta blockers to calm their nerves, and that can have a negative impact on their performance.
Right. I describe it as hearing a zombie play. There's nothing to it. The notes may be perfect, but there's no energy behind it because you've just taken away that excitement along with the anxiety.
So it's really a... Such a small
yeah, there's,
sweet spot.
There's no pharmaceutical solution. I mean, you can.
A lot of people have tried a lot of different ones. Yes. So, when people come to you, Kathleen, what are some of the first things that you recommend trying? Because obviously, not pharmaceuticals, but how do you help them cope with that?
Well, it's important to know that it's different for every person. And so, we wanted to take that into consideration. But I can say in general, some of the first steps that I help students look at, and we've mentioned the adrenaline situation. If there's a lot of adrenaline running in your body, it's getting you ready to run away and escape. And that's not what we're there to do when we're standing on stage ready to perform with the viola, as you say, Christina, or the piano, Tim. So we want to, at least the work that I've done, we want to help students dissipate the adrenaline. What can we do to get it to a point where it's moderate? And one thing I think helps a lot is aerobic exercise and doing something to either run to a performance or run and jump in place in your room, run the steps before, but somehow get some of that adrenaline out and get it dissipated so that we can calm down. So that's one thing that I work with.
And we have a tweet that's related to this. This is from Chase Garrett, who's been a guest on this program. He's an Iowa City-based boogie-woogie piano player. And he said, I definitely still get nervous sometimes when I perform. Occasionally, I'll do push-ups or jumping jacks backstage to pump myself up, but probably not just to pump himself up, but also to release excess energy. Do we see a whole violin section doing exercises backstage before a performance, Tim?
No. But I can speak personally that I am a pacer backstage. Some people deal with their preparation in total silence and solitude as they're communing with whoever, doing their yoga, getting ready for the performance. I'm one who, like, wears a path in the concrete backstage. And it's not because I'm nervous. It's just I've got all this energy that needs to dissipate. So, yeah.
All right. So you're letting it out.
I am.
Let's go to the phones. George is on the line in Mason City. Hi, George. Oh, there you go. Hi, George.
I'm kind of amused that you're doing this today. I sing in a choir, and I can absolutely say that when there's an audience, even if it's only one or two people, we always perform better. So when we're recording, we frequently invite just a couple people to come in and listen to us, because that interaction with the audience really makes all the difference. But what I really wanted to say was, a few years ago, my husband heard on public radio an interview with somebody who was auditioning for the elite orchestras in Europe. And there was evidently some sort of service you could pay somebody to make disruptions during your audition.
You could pay someone to do that?
You could pay someone to do this. So because of what the young woman was talking about, you know, you can't control everything that's going to happen in that audition room. And everyone is at such an elite level. It's shades of gray, you know, how much you can... who gets it. So ever since then, when my children are auditioning for Allstate or another competition, my husband will drop stacks of books, knock over folding chairs, or throw slippers at them.
Right.
You know, and that kind of helps them get over the, oh my God, something happened, and how am I going to recover? You know.
Oh, very interesting. And do they think it helps?
I think they tolerate it because it's their dad.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe it does help. But, yeah, those books and stuff, that can be pretty jarring if you're
sure.
Not expecting it. So anyway.
Oh, George, thank you so much for sharing your experience today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
So, Kathleen, is that something you'd recommend?
Well, actually, in the literature, when you read about managing performance anxiety, there are people who recommend practicing with adversity so that you are prepared if something does go wrong. Now, she was saying something about during an audition, and
right.
I don't understand that one. But practicing with adversity to see what kinds of things might possibly go wrong so that you do have a repertoire within you to deal with those things. So, yes, it can. I think it can be helpful.
All right. Now, aerobic exercise is one of your recommendations. You also help people work on their diet. Why is that?
Food impacts mood. I have a book at home called Food and Mood. And we do want to look at what we eat and how it impacts our physical functioning. So we want to keep our blood sugar as stable as possible. And so we want to eat foods that allow us to be more calm. And foods possibly with the amino acid tryptophan have a calming effect on the body.
Turkey.
And, yeah, right, exactly. Turkey and salmon and dairy products. But one thing that I have found I find most interesting, I've had music students, performance students at the university tell me for many, many years that they will eat a banana an hour before a performance. And I always wondered why. The medical students tell me that there's a very careful balance between sodium and potassium that affects muscle performance. And obviously all music has a muscle performance, you know, component to it. But I thought that tryptophan was only found in dairy products. Well, I got some information that bananas actually contain tryptophan, a small amount, but they do.
So bananas calm us down a little bit.
That's what I hear. And if it does physiologically, that's fine. And if it's a placebo, I recommend it too.
Now, of course, for a lot of us, it's not really what we eat. It's what's going on inside our brains.
Yes.
That is the real problem.
Yes.
And, Christina, we were talking about you make one mistake and then you think about that mistake and you think about it so much that you make another mistake. And then the thoughts just cascade and go around. And, of course, anticipating a performance, a lot of those negative thoughts, or anticipating taking a test, or anticipating giving a presentation, those negative thoughts can go around and around and around in our heads. How do you help people cope with that?
That's a very important issue, because obviously we've mentioned the physiological reactions, and then there are emotional reactions. But our cognitive reactions, our thoughts, play a big part in how well we're able to manage things. And if we go into a situation with much negative thinking, it can actually undermine the performance. And I work with people to, one, be aware that they do have negative thoughts, because sometimes people catastrophize and they're not aware. So, one, we have to be aware that we think negatively. And then, two, we have to learn to think more positively. And that's a skill. We're not born thinking a certain way. We learn to think a certain way. And anything that's learned can be unlearned and relearned. And so I work with people to learn to have more positive thoughts. And I think, Christina, you have done an excellent job of managing your performance anxiety. And you mentioned about the thought process, too, and how you had to confront that. And so, yes, we do work on that.
Now, I remember back when I was competing in athletics, a lot of the recommendations were to imagine visualize your performance and practice that in your head over and over and over. And if you see it, you can do it. It's part of the idea. Is that something that you use in music, Christina? Do you try to visualize the performance?
I try to know, I can hear in my head how I want it to sound, yeah. I don't visualize, like, actually the movements or anything like that, but I can hear my best sound and that I'm going to reach in to join into that.
And Tim, is that something that you've ever worked with people on?
Yeah, when I was a pianist, my best performances is when I was thinking about a split second before I was actually executing. So my mind was ahead of what we were doing. As soon as your mind is behind what you're doing, then that's when troubles happen. And when I'm conducting now, the whole rehearsal process, and even the logistical process of putting on a concert, it's all about visualization. How are you going to get the musicians on stage? How are you going to do such and such, phrasing and the like? All that is pre-planned, and so that at least 3-4 weeks, if not months ahead of the time, I'm already starting the visualization process, which is also why by the time I get to a performance, I am so excited, because all the hard work of the visualization and the actual rehearsing, where the stakes are the most high, have already passed. And now the actual point of what you've been doing has arrived, and it's a really positive experience.
Did it take a long time in your career to get to that point where the performance was the highlight?
Right. Yes, exactly. It used to be the process was what was important, not the performance. And flipping the two, that's the performance that's important, and the process is all about the visualization of that moment. That was a long process to really come to grips with.
Jay is on the line in Fort Dodge. Hello, Jay.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I just want to relate an experience of I've enjoyed singing all my life, began singing in church, and then found myself in 2006 in the Army, in the 82nd Airborne Division. I was part of the All-American Chorus, and we traveled extensively and sang for Army recruitment purposes, and I was one of the soloists. We did everything a cappella. And so we had a lot of opportunities to sing in front of some very large crowds. So I found it ironic when I heard the show today, and I just was filled with memories. The one that I wanted to relate was in Afghanistan in 2008. Our group was singing for an envoy there that included the sergeant major of the Army. He was there doing a morale tour for the troops, and he had with him some celebrity figures and the whole crew of cowboy cheerleaders and country music star Daryl Worley. And so we were in this in the command center there in on Bagram Airfield in Afghanistan, and one of our songs was Daryl Worley's famous song, Have You Forgotten? And that was one of my solos.
Oh.
So I found that out just before we were going to perform. And then they said, oh, by the way, Daryl Worley himself is going to be in the auditorium.
Oh, wow.
And so it was something else. One of the things that helped me in this situation and in all the others is that I was also the MC of the chorus. And so I had the ability to come out on stage. I was the first one to speak. And so I could kind of talk through my opening spiel and then try to make a verbal connection with the audience before we actually had to do any of the singing. And I found that so helpful just to be able to, and I know in many cases our listeners are thinking, well, I play an instrument or I'm not able to say anything to the audience. That may be the case. But if you are, I made having the ability to speak to them before beginning a performance was so helpful to me. It just really helped to relax the nerves. But
very interesting.
One thing I also did was able to anticipate that nervousness. And once you do this so many times, and I remember us singing in front of a full crowd at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas for the Professional Bull Riding World Finals one year, 10,000 people in this audience. And I was singing with the man who wrote the song, Have You Forgotten? We made a duet of it. And it could have been just a nerve-wracking experience, but you come to the point where you anticipate, I'm going to feel nervous. I know that. But at the same time, as your guests there have been talking about, the real the high that you kind of get on, the excitement, the anticipatory drive, I kind of learn to embrace it.
Right.
And
right.
Expect it and allow that to kind of exude in my performance. And
well, Jay,
no,
thank
it's
you
not
so much.
Going to be perfect.
Yeah, Jay, thank you so much for sharing your story today. We're going to go to a quick break here. Christina Mixamung, Tim Hankowich, and Kathleen Staley are with us today. We're talking about overcoming performance anxiety. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about overcoming performance anxiety this hour. And with me, I have Christina Mixamung. She is the principal violist of the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. She also teaches private lessons in Coralville. Tim Hankowich is here. He's the director of Orchestra Iowa, based in Cedar Rapids. And Kathleen Staley is here. She's a counselor at the University of Iowa who helps people work through many different kinds of performance anxiety. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well with your experiences and your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Eric is on the line in Fort Dodge. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Hi. You'd like to share a little bit of your performance experience with us. What do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, it's interesting how it works, and normally I'm a pretty shy guy. You know, I don't, you know, talk to large crowds. I get nervous. But when it comes to performing, and, you know, I'm a rock musician, you know, rock and roll and such, you know, I get nervous like anybody else, start pacing and stuff. And you think, you know, my shyness would inhibit me. But, you know, once I get into the venue, you know, you feel people, you see the other groups playing. That usually is what gets me over it, getting excited to participate and share. And usually by, you know, maybe a couple drinks later and, you know, seeing a couple groups play, I'm, you know, my light is gone. I'm excited. I want to, you know, get it going. And it's really interesting how that dynamic works, just the atmosphere of
interesting
live music.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for sharing that. And Kathleen, that leads me to a question that I have, because I work in a performance field and I know a lot of people who are performers. And one of the very interesting things is that I find there are a lot of very introverted, shy people who go into performance fields. And that seems to be a little counterintuitive, because if I feel nervous talking to just one person, why would I feel more comfortable talking to a crowd? Is that a phenomenon that you see with the students that you work with?
On occasion, I do. And if someone is very introverted, it's an interesting thing, because for some performers, it's when they're in a performance mode, it's putting on a different persona they're acting like a different person. And I've read about various television actors and stage actors and actresses that say that right before they go on, they're extremely nervous and that they're introverted in their private lives. But that whole performance piece, it makes you a different person.
Interesting. Well, and I see both Tim and Christina shaking their heads or nodding their heads. So you see a lot of introverts who go into musical performance?
Well, I'm very shy, actually. It's really hard for me to talk to strangers if I don't know what they're expecting of me. But performing, that's a whole different story. It's easier.
Interesting, Tim?
Yeah, musicians, but I've also met a lot of actors, actresses, comedians that are totally different on stage than they are in their private lives. And I'm more gregarious in my role as music director. And my wife would probably say I'm a lot more keyed down when at my home life. So yeah, there is a public face and a private face for anyone. But it is quite remarkable sometimes when you meet somebody who's really shy and quiet and then just explodes on stage, whether it's their medium is music or comedy or acting.
Right. We have this email from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. She says, speaking in public is not a problem for me. I get twitchy, but I use that as a tool rather than an obstacle. It's the same for delivering lines on stage. I can physically perform in front of people with no problem at all. I can play instruments in front of people with little difficulty as well. However, the thought of singing such that even one person could hear me is absolutely horrifying. I did it twice, and both times I had to stare at the floor and basically plug my ears, which obviously looked ridiculous. Can you recommend any way for me to overcome this last hang-up? Kathleen, I mean, and I think that part of her question is very interesting because, you know, we've talked about how you get nervous and, you know, performance anxiety comes from too many nerves. But a lot of times I think it doesn't make any sense to the person that it's happening to. You can't explain it rationally, what you're feeling.
It's very interesting because she's talking about being able to perform in many different areas and then having only one that's very difficult. So I would be curious about what were her past experiences with vocal performance. Did she have some negative experiences? What is her ability and proficiency with vocal performance? Is there a difference there? And what is her preparation and practice schedule for that? So I would want to know about all of those different areas in order to address that question.
Interesting. Well, and I wonder if there's a different level of vulnerability based on how you feel about something. Christina, again, you're nodding.
I feel the same way about singing in public. My parents are both singers, both vocalists. And when I was in college, I was sort of guilted into being taking voice lessons as well, which meant I had to perform. And it is incredibly scary to perform while you're singing because it's not just an instrument you're playing. It's actually you that you're performing. It's your voice. So it's if it doesn't sound good, it's sort of a bigger reflection on who you are.
Interesting. Tim, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're much more vulnerable as a singer than you are as an instrumentalist. And I wonder if there is a deep-seated anxiety because somebody told her somewhere along the line that she wasn't good. And as a result, that's probably stuck with her unconsciously for a really long time, which is why today she's having difficulty singing.
Tim, I recently went to your holiday extravaganza, Holiday Spectacular, and you work with a lot of different kinds of groups on stage. You had a whole choir of children on stage with you. When you're working with kids, is there a difference in how you're coaching a performance than when you're working with adults?
Oh, absolutely. You have to be able to speak their language. You know, if you come across as the maestro, it's not going to work. I think whatever organization you're directing, whether it's a symphony orchestra, whether it's a professional or a student or an amateur organization, that you have to adjust your approach because one size does not fit all. But getting to the performance anxiety, you would be probably surprised that Christmas program is one of the most stressful things that I do the entire year because you have a bell choir, a children's choir, a student string ensemble. You have an adult choir. You have, oh, my goodness, what else we had? Dancers.
The organ.
I mean, there were so many different aspects. Getting those things on and off stage seamlessly, each is a great worry because if something screws up backstage out of your control, it's all about control. Something screws up, then I'm on stage and I don't know how to proceed. And that's why I get so anxious about that, because I think that at the heart of all these performance anxieties is the fear of loss of control.
That makes a lot of sense. Kathleen, something that I think we've all been told at some time or another, for example, before you were, you know, when you were in sixth grade or seventh grade, you had to give a speech in front of the class. Somebody at some point said to you, imagine the audience in their underwear and you'll be okay. That's a piece of advice that gets passed around a lot. Is there anything to that?
Well, I can answer that on a number of different levels. I don't know personally. I don't know that that particularly helps. Imagining the audience in their underwear, and some of the performance anxiety management literature dismisses that, by the way. But I think, you know, there is, and I think our colleagues here today are talking about the interaction between performer and audience, and it is very important. And there is energy that is gained from that. And as you say, it's, and we've all said, it's very different performing alone or performing with people there. And some people say when they're even recording alone, they want people there to have that experience of audience. So what I tell students is look for the friendly face in the audience. Look for the person who's nodding his or her head at you or smiling. That really helps. And I tell people, you know, when you are in the audience, it's very kind of you to, you know, to react positively.
And right. I think, don't sit and look at your smartphone. Look up.
Look up. Right. And that energy, I think that's what really helps. And looking for the person to smile. And another thing to keep in mind that, especially with public speaking anxiety, 75% of people suffer with public speaking anxiety. And so people are, I think, you know, very sensitive to that and, you know, are you know, willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. The studies I've read on music performance anxiety, 25% of classical music performers suffer with performance anxiety. My guess is, though, that that is higher than that.
I can imagine. Mm-hmm. I was asking about advice given to young people earlier with Tim and Christina. I know you work with young people. You also work with professional musicians your own age. Do you see a difference in the kinds of performance anxiety that people experience at different ages? Or is it all part of the same?
The children are much, they're more honest about it, and they will tell you they're nervous. And it's obvious that they're feeling that. With the grown-ups, I mean, we try to hide that as much as possible. So I don't know. I don't know which of my friends suffer from that at all.
Interesting. Tim?
I sometimes find that ignorance is bliss, and I find kids sometimes are not nervous because they haven't been taught to be. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I've found children who perform at such a high level because that's what they do, and that's so positive.
If you can just hold on to that.
Exactly.
Right. Sean is on the line in Marion. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good. You had an early bad experience, huh?
Yeah, when I was in actually a couple bad experiences. First one was when I was in elementary school. It's, you know, there's always like a few of us students who were picked to do like the Pledge of Allegiance plus the school announcements over the intercom system.
Yeah.
And I screwed up on the Pledge of Allegiance on a couple points. And after it was done, my principal said, you know what, you messed up on your Pledge of Allegiance, but you know what, you're going to get better. And to be told by someone in authority like that, that don't worry about your mistake, it's going to get a little bit better, you know, each and every time, really helped me quite a bit in my other aspects of student life, if you will.
Interesting.
She's the principal. She has the confidence.
Right,
in me,
she knows,
so
right?
Why shouldn't I have? Yeah. And my second part was, you know, in junior high, I played for the basketball team in junior high, and I wasn't really nervous taking a shot during regular play, but when I got fouled and I was placed on the, you know, like the free throw line, oh, man.
Very stressful.
It was like I was more nervous trying to make a free throw than I was, you know, shooting a regular shot in regular play.
Being the center of attention seems to be something that, that really triggers a lot of performance anxiety for people. When they're everybody's moving around, you don't think everybody's watching me right now. But Sean, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And we have this question from Jane in Washington, Kathleen. She says, is performance anxiety, no matter what area of life we're talking about, is this something that, that is unique to being on stage or something that you can find in all different arenas?
I think we can look at it in many different arenas because the basic physiological and cognitive disturbances are the same across all. That you know, we have an adrenaline rush. We have to manage that. We have to put it into, you know, get it to a point where we can use it productively. We have to calm our thoughts. We have to find ways to think positively, and we have to deal with our emotional reactions. And that happens across, you know, public speaking anxiety, test-taking anxiety, stage and music performance.
And now, just as Christina was talking about auditions earlier and the stakes being so high, with tests, the stakes can be incredibly high, especially when we're talking about the LSAT or the MCAT. I mean, tests that students take that determine their future. When you work with students on their test-taking performance anxiety, how is your approach different? What do you tell them?
Well, we do. We work with the dissipating the adrenaline with the exercise. We certainly do that. And then we have to talk about positive thinking. And as you know, anxiety interferes with memory. And so if we're very anxious, we can't remember things that we need to know for those exams. So we have to learn to calm that down, obviously, through exercise, through what we eat can help calm us down. And then we have to work on positive thinking. And I have students that get so anxious, they say, well, I get to the exam and I can't remember the positive thoughts. So we write them down on 3x5 cards.
And although they can't take those into the room with them.
They can at the very before the exam starts. And there are different things we can write on those cards. You know, we can say all the positive things we've done, or we can have friends write positive thoughts for us. Or we can use inspirational thoughts or scriptural thoughts if we have a religious perspective. So I think we have to really work on the way we think about things. It makes a huge difference.
It's so interesting that the common element with all of these different kinds of performance anxiety. I mean, if you practice and you practice and you practice and you study and you study and you study and you have that knowledge and you're actually prepared, there's still that leap that you have to take. And that seems to be self-doubt. Is that where most of us get hung up?
Well, I mean, I think it really is that interaction of all the variables. You know, some people are born with a very active central nervous system, and some people are not. And so we may have to deal with that. And then some people have a tendency to negative thinking or catastrophic thinking. We have to deal with that. And some people are more sensitive to their emotions. So I think we have to deal with all of those variables to calm ourselves and be productive when we have to perform.
And we're nearly out of time, but Tim, maybe as someone who leads large groups of people through mm-hmm. performances, maybe you could leave us with a little bit of wisdom, and then we'll have Christina play us out for the end of the hour. But you have seen so many different performers right. from so many different walks of life, different levels of proficiency. Mm-hmm. What guidance can you give us as far as a successful onstage performance?
Wow. Well, I think there's a saying that goes that amateurs practice until they get a passage right. Professionals will practice it until they won't get it wrong. And that's really what that's a great deal of the preparation that's involved in high-stakes performance. But at the end of the day, in my own work with an orchestra, I don't want my orchestra to play carefully. I don't want them to play defensively to avoid making mistakes. I want to give them permission to put it on the line. So maybe they play a wrong note or they split a note here or there, but I would much prefer a passionate performance mm-hmm. than a dead, correct performance. And so my job now is to inspire other people to take risk. And that is that nexus between rehearsing and performance. And that big leap is that's the defining point between...
And where the magic happens.
That's where the magic happens. Yeah.
Tim Hankowich, thank you.
Thank you.
Tim Hankowich is director of Orchestra Iowa. Kathleen Staley is a counselor at the University of Iowa. And Christina Mixamung is a chief or principal violist at the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. She'll play us out today. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.